Lisa Lanier is on the line. She's our official attorney of the Two Guys Impro Show. The segment is called Lawyer Up. She's president of the Lanier Law Group. Got three good stories for her today to get inside these lawsuits. One involves Rick Springfield. Very emotional in court the other day. We'll get to him in a moment. Good morning, Lisa. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. I hope you guys are.
Well, very well. It's good to talk to you. The first story we have for you today involves something we've talked about before. It's one of these lottery winners that is claiming he owns part of a ticket when in reality, the guy who bought the ticket says he doesn't own it. There's been a real fight going on in Montana now. Apparently on December 23rd, there is a guy who is working at the town pump, a gas station convenience store, wanted to buy a ticket but couldn't because he was on duty. So he asked his friend, buy me a ticket. Yeah. And so the friend did. He said, okay, I'll buy one for you, one for me, and a third, and any winnings we get, we'll split. So they agreed to that, and the man who was working and couldn't buy the ticket, his name is, I believe his name is Hess. I think that's right. Anyhow, he says that the ticket won, and now he wants part of the $500,000 of the million-dollar prize. And he says other people were there who heard the man who bought the ticket say, okay, we'll split it if they win. So they never had anything in writing, but they had a verbal agreement that they would split the money. The man who bought the ticket says, oh, no, I don't remember that at all, and he's keeping the money. So how can he win? Can the guy win who basically just has this verbal agreement, Lisa?
He can. The law in the state where this took place does allow for oral agreements, verbal agreements, as enforceable contracts, and they view them pretty much just as enforceable as any other contract, with a few exceptions for things that like deal with like real estate or things like that. But so in this situation, because it fits within those allowable areas for a verbal contract, as long as he can prove, you know, he'll have to come up with these witnesses, and as long as he can prove that they made this agreement, then he would be entitled to that.
Okay. So the witnesses really help, obviously.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the only, typically, you know, when you have a verbal agreement like that, the problem is that usually there are not witnesses. But this guy apparently has several people that heard them enter into this agreement.
Yes. The guy in question is Jeff Falang, and he won $1 million.
Falang, huh?
Falang won the million. The other man, Michael Hess, said, well, part of that's mine. Now, after taxes, he got $681,000. That's what the payout was. And so this guy says, well, I'm entitled to $500,000 of that $1 million because you said we'd split it. So you think he will get it because he's got the witnesses. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I think he probably will. The one problem he's going to run into is that the Lottery Commission, any of these kinds of disputes, they don't feel that that has anything to do with them. Whoever bears the ticket, they give them the money.
Right.
They've already given this guy the money.
Right.
I think his net payout after taxes was a little over $600,000.
Yes.
And so this Hess guy has to act quickly, and I think he's seeking an order, I don't know if he's gotten it yet, to require that those winnings be held and not spent.
Okay.
Because these people go through this money so fast when they get it that one big problem that he may have is it's all gone, and then he has no recourse other than to sue the guy, and once it's gone, it's gone.
Oh, so if he spends the money, it's going to be a lot harder for him to collect any money. I mean, if he, let's say he goes and buys a new house or a bunch of nice sports cars or whatever, can he be forced to sell those, liquidate them, and give the guy half his cash?
He can certainly try, but it's a lot harder to get his hands on that money if it's gone.
Figured. Let's go to the next story. It took place in Kentucky. Great video that goes along with it. And actually, it just makes you, when you watch it, you're just waiting for something to happen. And when it does happen, it's pretty graphic. There is a Kentucky police officer who is suing a gun shop after he accidentally shot off his own finger with a loaded weapon, and there's security video of it. Isn't that, that's that thing where you know it's going to happen, but it's hard to look away.
It's the most, tense, like 20 seconds of video you'll ever see. I showed it to Kelly one day earlier this week in the office, and there's a moment when he grabs the gun and you think it's going to happen, but it doesn't. And then it happens like 10 seconds later.
The guy's name is...
And you're looking at, while you're looking at the video, even though you know that no innocent bystander is shot, that's what I kept thinking the whole time, is because he could, if he'd pulled that trigger at several other moments, there would have been somebody shot next to him.
That's true.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't even think of that.
There wasn't anybody really around him. He picked up the gun. His name is Daryl Smith. The clerk behind the counter hands him the gun. He's looking at it, you know, sort of thinking, maybe I want to buy it, maybe I don't. It's a .380 caliber, a handgun, and this happened in March. He put his left hand up in front of the pistol, surprisingly, and the gun goes off. I guess he pulled the trigger. The gun goes off, blew his finger off. I mean, his finger's blown off, and now he's having trouble. He can't work anymore because he's a cop, and he's out of a job, basically.
Do we know if the guy behind the counter told him it was loaded?
No, we don't know that. That's a good question.
But he's saying, now, be careful, this is loaded.
No, I don't think he did, because this man is claiming that they should never have a loaded gun in a gun shop. And other people have said, well, you've got to assume that every gun you pick up is loaded. That's one of the main rules of safety. So how much fault is with the gun shop and how much fault is with the guy that pulled the trigger with his hand in front of it? Does he win this lawsuit?
Absolutely. I think the police officer is going to win this, because even though, you know, in training, in firearms training, of course, people are taught to assume every gun is loaded as a safety precaution.
Yep.
But in a gun shop, they should never, ever hand you a loaded gun.
Yes.
And it's very, very common to dry fire a weapon when you're examining it and thinking about buying it.
I'm turned on right now. I like how you say dry
reminds
fire.
You of junior high.
Yeah.
You know, there's a pill for that.
You know. I've had that problem myself, Lisa. I've dry fired a few times.
Who hasn't?
It's not uncommon.
Let's all be honest.
You just said it's not uncommon.
I know. Don't be embarrassed.
Every guy goes through it, Lisa.
Don't be embarrassed. Yeah, don't be embarrassed.
A dry fire.
It just went off in my hand.
I nearly lost a finger myself.
Yeah. Where do you want it to go off?
So you're saying that the gun shop entirely at fault here?
I think, you know, it's certainly substantially at fault. And what happens in most jurisdictions is, even if the officer was somewhat negligent for firing, you know, for dry firing, then they would simply reduce his award by the percentage of fault that he was at fault. So.
He is permanently disfigured. He's gone through lots of pain and suffering, according to his attorney, many surgeries, and he's got medical bills through the roof, and his career has ended as a police officer because of this finger injury. He lost his finger during the entire thing. How much do you think he collects? He collects for all that and then some on top of it for pain and suffering?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the loss of his career is huge, and certainly a police officer like that, you have to be able to fire your weapon and you have the use of your hands. So it's a big deal for him to lose his career.
Yeah.
And, I think he'll recover pretty nicely. And he probably also collected workers' comp if he was on the job when he did it. And then he'll just have to pay back workers' comp out of whatever he recovers against the gun shop.
There you are. Lisa is on the side of the man who dry fired.
In all seriousness, what is dry fire? Does that mean you shoot it when there's not supposed to be anything in it?
Nothing in it.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
You have to know how the trigger feels, right, mm-hmm. before you buy a gun.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I don't know how that works.
Lisa's a gun person.
I know she is.
She goes out to a lot of charity shooting events and that kind of thing.
You know, it's almost like maybe the gun owner could say, look, hey, we're not going to charge. It's like selling a toy without the batteries.
Yes.
Hey, your first bullet's free.
Is that what it is? One in the chamber?
That's exactly right. Last story today is about a celebrity, Rick Springfield, who broke down in court the other day because... that's us singing, sorry.
That's the good version.
That guitar. Good friend of mine.
Sorry, that's the wrong one. That's not Rick Springfield. We got the wrong version there. I'll get the actual Rick Springfield.
No such thing as a wrong version.
The deal is that Rick Springfield... he was apparently in 2004 has been accused by a woman named Vicky Calcagno, who was 34 at the time. He was in concert and he knocked her unconscious with his butt, leading to serious disabling and permanent injuries. He's in court for again, apparently over the past 10 years. Vicky's lawyer and she have tried to sue Rick Springfield for this, and the lawyer grilled him so hard earlier this week that he broke down on the stand. Rick Springfield did. Apparently he was dancing out in the audience and knocked her down with his butt, and she has been in bad shape ever since. Lisa, is this just the chance you take when you go to a Rick Springfield show, or does she have the...
Is that on the back of the ticket?
She got a case. Artist butt may come in contact with you.
Exactly. Apparently it was just a really raucous version of Jesse's Girl.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, apparently what happened in this situation... And by the way, I'm so jealous of this lawyer that made Rick Springfield cry, because that's just like one of those moments that you live for. I would personally love to make Rick Springfield cry.
What a dream. You made Rick Springfield cry.
Exactly. It's a lawyer's dream, but... And apparently what happened in this situation was that the lawsuit started out 10 years ago, like you said. He actually fell from the stage onto these people.
Ah.
And it just so happened that as he fell, it was his butt that hit this woman. And the case was actually in trial, and a really key witness came forward that had not been discovered before, who claimed that she was also injured during that fall, and she was supporting this injured lady with her very newly discovered testimony. And so when that happens, the defendant here, Rick Springfield, had not had a chance to do discovery with her, elicit what she would testify about and that sort of thing. And so they declared a mistrial, and now it's gone back to trial.
Okay. Do you think, he just fell off the stage, so do you think she wins the case?
If there was no negligence, people fall sometimes in the absence of negligence, then I don't really see how she would recover.
But I don't either. You can't blame Rick Springfield.
No.
His butt had to come with him. He fell.
Yeah, I
couldn't leave the butt behind.
No, the butt stayed. I really thought he was shaking it in her face and knocked her over with it, but that's not the case.
That might be a better case.
Yeah. Then you've got a case. It's like I saw, my wife and I saw Michael Bublé in concert.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he went out into the audience and they attacked him, and that was part of his act. Women just were all over him. He would shake around them, put his butt in all these women's face, and he would let them
right.
Basically put their hands on him.
How hard was it dragging your wife out of there?
God, she was tearing at him and everything. She was just trying to get him. We were in the second deck. I didn't spend the money on the floor seats.
She jumped down manic style from the balcony. I'm coming, Michael!
Yeah. Boy, she loves Michael Bublé. She hates his wife.
Of course.
Wife speaks no English, apparently, and that gets under her skin. So you think the woman does not recover anything from Rick Springfield's butt?
Yeah, she's going to have to show there was some negligence there. I think if he just fell, I just don't see it. And it's one of those kind of things that you did there for a while in the 90s when everybody was doing stage diving. You saw some pretty bad injuries and with crowd surfing and that sort of thing, and people were recovering for that. But I think this was just he lost his balance or something.
There you are.
What does she want? Rick Springfield ain't got no money, does he?
No, I think Rick's probably got some money, don't you think?
He's gone through that.
I don't know. I don't think he has much left.
You don't think so? From the General Hospital days? The Jesse's
General
Girl?
Hospital. He made scale.
He's looking really rough, by the way. He's looking rough.
Has he had some work done?
Feel bad for him. Crying on the stand and all.
I really would like to start a series called Things Recovered from Rick Springfield's Butt.
Yeah, when I said that, I thought it sounded a little funny. She can't recover from Rick Springfield's butt. Thank you, Lisa, as always. Great legal expertise. You can find it at LanierLawGroup.com. She's president there. She's our official attorney. Good to talk to you, Lisa.
Have a great weekend.